Unit 4. The Frightening Consequences of Finding a Body.
I was driving along one night very late. In fact, it was 3 a.m. And I was going home after a dance. And what happened was that I saw a body lying spread-eagled in the road.
And just at first, in the headlights?
Yes, just picked up in the headlights, lying in the road. And at first I was quite frightened, because in that country it's quite common for ambushes to take place.
Mm-hmm.
A body is laid out in the road, and then people jump out when you stop and rob you, and the body is only a decoy, it's not really dead at all.
Mm.
However, it was very open country, and there were no bushes, no cover on either side. So I stopped.
Were you alone?
No, I had a friend with me who I was actually driving home.
Mm-hmm.
And his name was Michael.
Yes.
And we got out and we looked at the man, and he was alive but mm-hmm. unconscious. And there were pools of blood on the road, and he'd been stabbed in the back.
Oh, no.
And one of his cheeks had been slashed right off. You could see inside his mouth from the outside.
It wasn't a car accident?
No, he'd been brutally assaulted with a knife.
Ooh.
And there was no weapon anywhere near. And he was a heavy man, and he was drunk. You could smell that alcohol, but he was completely unconscious, and had froth and blood coming out of his mouth. It was awful. So we picked him up and put him in the car. He's very slippery, very heavy. But we got him in the car.
It's pretty difficult, isn't it, to get someone into a car when
they're unconscious.
Yes.
And we didn't want to hurt him anymore, you know.
Yeah.
And we drove him to the nearest hospital, which was only a couple of miles away.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got there, they wouldn't let us in. They said, this is the wrong hospital for night services. You've got to go somewhere else. So finally, I just screamed at them and got in to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then we couldn't find any nurses or doctors. They all seemed to be asleep. And by making a lot of noise, a nurse finally came, and she opened the car door, and the poor fellow slumped out of the car, still unconscious. And she just walked away from him and said, fill in a registration form. I was terribly angry. I lost my temper.
Yes, quite.
And screamed at her. And finally, she did do something for him, and she fetched a doctor. Well, the doctor was very nice. She was a lady doctor, very, very nice doctor. And she said to me, well, if I were you, I'd go now, don't stay. And I said, well, obviously this is a criminal case. I'd better report to the police.
Yes.
And she said, no, I wouldn't if I were you. I'd just go now.
Terrifying for you,
yes.
Having been charitable.
Yes. So, quite. So anyway, I did go. I just left and phoned up the hospital the next morning and was told that the man had died shortly afterwards.
Okay.
And he'd never come round. He'd never said anything or regained consciousness.
So there was no idea what had happened?
No, nobody knew. Well, nothing happened for some months, and I thought I was perfectly safe. And in fact, it was 4 months later when I came home from school one day, and my guard, because I had a guard on who looked after me,
uh-huh.
came in and said, the police are here. So I said, well, you'd better bring them in. And they were two very nice little traffic policemen.
Yes.
And they sat down, they spoke very good English. They sat down and I gave them a cup of tea, and they said, well, we found out that you were the person who brought that man to the hospital, because the nurse took your car number and gave it to us. And obviously she'd been angry with me, because
yes.
I'd been angry with her.
Yes.
So they said, well, there's nothing to worry about. We're not going to do anything, because obviously you were just being very kind-hearted and giving this man a lift. But mm-hmm. we'd like a complete statement, please.
Yes. And so, this was 4 months later.
Yes.
You'd more or less forgotten
about it, yes.
What a shock.
Yes.
Mm.
So I made a complete statement, as much as I could remember. They asked me everything, you know, the angle the body was lying, whether it was facing north or south, all this sort of thing. And I made a statement, and they translated it into their language,
mm-hmm.
and then I signed it.
Yes.
And then I heard nothing more for a couple of weeks. They said, oh, you'll have a very good mark on your personal file for this sort of thing. I thought, oh, jolly good.
Lovely.
Clocked up some credit.
Mm-hmm.
But then about 3 weeks later, I was teaching in the classroom, and the CID came and arrested me. and took me to a police station. And when I got there, I was interrogated for several hours. And they'd also picked up the boy I was with that night. And he was also interrogated for several hours. And they said, we know you did this. We know that it was a brutal assault by car, that you saw this man, you deliberately knocked him down, ran him over several times. And I said, but surely the post-mortem must have shown that he died of knife wounds. No, no, the police post-mortem says that he died of repeated assaults by a car.
And so long afterwards, it's difficult to prove anything.
Yes, but obviously this was cooked up, because you might, I mean, there's no question about
there being a difference
between, a knife assault and a car assault.
Well, quite, yeah.
So I was very, very worried about the whole thing. And the police said, you can come back tomorrow. We're not going to do anything today. Come back tomorrow. So I went rushing straight round to the British Embassy.
I bet you did.
And the consul was new, and he hadn't ever had a case like this before. So he sort of panicked and said, oh, I don't know what to do. It's never happened to me before. You're on a murder charge. He said, are you on a manslaughter, assault or murder? I said, I'm on a capital murder charge. So he said, well, we'll have to do something. So he got the vice consul, who was very accustomed to the country. The vice consul took charge of the business, and the ambassador was told about it, and he made representations. And in this embassy, they had some guards.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, when you have to go back to the police station tomorrow, we'll take the guards with us.
I see.
So we went in the British Embassy lorry with the vice consul and the guard. And there I was with this enormous vice consul. He was about 6'6" in very Yorkshire.
Yes.
And two of these guards, who were also very large and very strong. And the police captain simply quailed, and he said, oh, I'm sorry, but there's been a mistake. And I discovered later on, my next-door neighbour was, in fact, a lawyer. And he told me shortly afterwards that his cousin, who was a clerk in the law courts, had actually been in court when this case had come up. And what had happened was that there'd been a fight in a bar.
Yes.
And the victim, who I found, had been stabbed.
Mm-hmm.
But the girls in the bar had given evidence against the murderer because they didn't like him at all. He was a very notorious fellow.
Yes.
So they'd given him up to the police. But he'd bought himself off the charge. He'd bribed the judge.
So they had to find someone.
They had to get the blood money for the relatives. They had to have their blood money.
Yeah.
So they tried to find another person to arrest, and obviously I was the most likely person to pick upon.
It must have been dreadfully frightening at the time.
It was frightening. The ambassador said to me, well, if I were you, I'd just leave the country as quickly as you can. And I packed up everything, and I was out of the country. I had a lot of difficulty getting an exit visa.
Yes.
And my money was blocked. I couldn't get it out of the country for some time.
In fact, everything about it's frightening, because everything you did caused more trouble.